is... Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Eta dumelang, molweni, sanibonani, bonjia, bon dia. What have we forgotten?
Guten Morgen.
Guten Morgen. Bonjour. All protocols observed. Welcome to another episode of Wow What a Week with Fresh and Botsan. This week on Wow Politrix, President Ramaphosa says he was blindsided by the disbandment of the PKTT. The Madlanga Commission and Parliament ad hoc committees continue to turn up the heat with Masemola and Mkhwanazi back under scrutiny while one witness continues to stumble. And in Johannesburg, the ANC region moves to recall Mayor Morero, but national leadership pushes back while MKP brings back Dr. Hlophe into Parliament leadership. Meanwhile, the so-called white genocide narrative takes a hit as some South Africans return home from the U.S., and globally, Trump lashes out at NATO as a top intelligence official resigns. Let's get straight into it. This is Wow What a Week. Hashtag Politrix. Butang.
Good morning, Fresh. Morning to the followers and the viewers.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
The disbandment of the PKTT, the Political Killings Task Team, was disbanded.
Yes.
And Minister Mkhunu, suspended Minister Mkhunu.
No, the president suspended Minister Mgundi.
Yes.
Minister Mgundi didn't suspend himself.
Yes. Alluded to the fact that, Commander-in-Chief knew.
Yes.
Yes. But well, Commander-in-Chief is like, no, I didn't know.
I can't recall where, you know, these things have been happening too much parallel to each other, the Madlanga Commission. I can't remember whether Minister Mgundi was at the Madlanga or was at the ad hoc or both, but... One of his defense was that, no, I didn't just do this thing or giving command or orders to disband the Political Killing Task Team, the PKTT. Actually, I consulted with the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the Republic, because the viewers will recall that the Political Killing Task Team was established by the head of state, who's the Commander-in-Chief. And it was established particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, but subsequently, when they were becoming successful, they started talking about extending it to Gauteng, to Mpumalanga, and to the Western Cape. Mm. Even the Free State was mentioned at some stage. Therefore, and being an operational task team, the president appoints the commissioner of the South African Police Service, like the DGs, of government departments. Obviously, as an operational matter, it was a directive given by the president, obviously in consultation with the Minister of Police at that time, and then to give a direct directive to, to the Commission of Police. So in reversing that process, logically, it will be the president informing the Commission of Police based on facts or various things. To say this task team has achieved its objectives or it has failed, let us disband it, or we can't afford it anymore. But for the minister to unilaterally do that in consultation, not even with the head of the task team in the province of KwaZulu-Natal or the commissioner, that was wrong from the very beginning. But it came out with evidences that been put before us at the Madlanga Commission as well as the ad hoc committee that in disbanding or attempting to disband this task team, there were alleged criminal elements or people who were also involved in various forms. Some they got to know about the disbandment before, some they got the letter before the police officials, some media personnel and all that. Now, in his defense, the suspended police minister Mkhunu said, but he didn't do that unilaterally, even the commander-in-chief, the president knew he had had conversations and consultations with the president. He briefed the president.
But did he brief the president? Did they have a consultation or was it brought up in passing at a funeral?
From what President Ramaphosa said during the week in being questioned in parliament by the parliamentary portfolio committee that deals with police affairs, not the ad hoc committee, the usual or the normal parliamentary committee, he came out and said, no, there was never consultations. He was never consulted. There's a news stream he got to know about it formally and the processes that were followed internally, directives he got to know through the Madlanga Commission, the ad hoc committee. However, the speculations that Minister Mgcunu thought maybe in passing, saying to his comrade or principal, by the way, I've given a directive, I've decided to disband this. So Minister Mgcunu wants to interpret that as briefing and or consulting with the president. That can be a briefing flash. When you consult with your principal on disbanding a task team or on the KPIs you have signed, the jobs that you have signed up to, you need to send a memo, you need to have a report, you need to sit down and brief your principal. So if they've met on the corridors of Luthuli House or the Union Building or at a funeral or anywhere, and you say over Christmas or New Year, Chief, I've decided to disband this task team, that cannot be considered and regarded as an official notification to the head of state that you have notified him. And I don't think it happened. After listening to what President Ramaphosa had said, and having have listened prior to what Minister Mgcunu had said, I don't think there was a briefing. I don't think it's total shocking news. I don't think it was blank. There has been a conversation between the two. But I think...
Do you think it's being thrown under the bus?
I suspect that President Ramaphosa can't continue to defend and protect the suspended Minister Mgcunu anymore at the expense of his own credibility, at the expense of government spending, at the expense of the African National Congress that is wounded. I don't think he can continue to do that. There's a lot at stake regarding this. This is an election year, most important elections, local government that is at the heartbeat of people. And I think he's been thrown under the bus. And I'll tell you why I'm saying this. Why would the president come and deny that now, months after Minister Mgcunu said, but I did engage the president?
So are you saying the president should have said, I doth protest? It is a lie.
As soon as it happened. Well, maybe, yes. Maybe he wouldn't say it's a lie. But as a head of state, he should have stood up at that time and addressed it, you know, diplomatically or in a seasoned manner to say, no, hold your horses. You have mentioned this to me in passing, or you never mentioned this to me in passing. He could have actually even not even addressed the nation. He could have asked the spokesperson or the presidency to issue a statement to say President Ramaphosa refutes claims that there was consultation. And if there was really a talking in passing, state it like that. To say, President, could you mention this thing, but we haven't really engaged it. Don't wait for months. Then evidence start piling up. That shows that the process of disbandment had taken place actually before the 31st of December 2024 or whatever year was. It had taken place. There were memos running in between, as I said earlier, on alleged criminal cartels having access to that information, the media having access to that information. The commissioners and the provincial commissioners hearing about this whole thing, and others knew. So there was something happening, whether legally or illegally, whether formally or informally, there was something happening. And I think the president should have nabbed this at the very beginning to bring confidence to us as a nation, but to also clear the gray area.
Okay.
And you know, when this was happening, I started seeing the body language and the tone of ANC members now changing the tone as well.
Are you saying the comrades in the ADO committee?
Yes.
His body language?
Yes.
Is saying that we can't defend it anymore?
I don't think they
or
can.
Or defend him anymore?
Him anymore. I don't think they can. And when the head of the organization, who is the head of state, you know, coincidentally, had said something, I don't see other members of the ANC talking contrary to that.
Given that the proverbial writing is on the wall, do you think suspended Minister Mgcunu has a duty to say, Mr. President, it's been an honor serving under you. Thank you for trusting me. In order to protect what's left of the dignity of the office, I'm going to step back. Or do you think he must campaign it and just hang on?
Fresh.
I'm not going to jump, so you must push me.
You know, be the advisor of Minister Mtsumi. That would be a good thing to do now for his
podcast. I think it would be a dope honorable thing to
dope.
Do.
And I'll tell
that
you why.
I'm not admitting any guilt,
yes.
But just to safeguard what's left of the dignity of EC. Iriki Lukweling, thank you for trusting me. It was an honor serving under you.
Yeah.
And then you walk off with your head held up high.
Let me tell you what will that, if he goes, your option,
yes.
What will help the ANC and him and that office with what? It will help him because so far, nobody has ever come out and implicated Minister Mtsunu with any direct corruption or link to the alleged criminal cartels.
Okay.
The only wrong thing he has done, according to me, and in my observation so far, was the manner he handled the disbandment of the PKTT. That was administratively and procedurally wrong. Whether he did it due to pressure or influence of the alleged criminals or not, we haven't been given material evidence. In fact, even those who accused him, I listened to General Mkwana, I listened to the Brown Mokotis and many other people, they are only talking about, no, but he was not supposed to handle this. This is the commissioner saying he didn't engage the commissioner. That's an administrative error to can relieve yourself of your duties, or the president must relieve you. But I think whilst nobody has blamed him for any, like he has received money and kickbacks and all that, step out. It will be good for him. It will save the image of the ANC, which is bleeding and wounded at the moment. It will also stabilize the leadership of the South African Police Service, because President Ramaphosa is sitting with a problem now. He's sitting with two ministers. They are full ministers. The constitution doesn't allow that. He's sitting with two deputy ministers and two police ministers because, again, to remind the viewers and the followers, we spoke about this months ago, how President Ramaphosa, and I don't know why the opposition, they didn't take him up on that. Were in appointing Professor Kashalia on the post while there's a sitting minister. It was unconstitutional. So I think it will also bail and save President Ramaphosa.
What do you then say to the person who argues that, yes, there's no direct link in terms of, apart from the way the disbanding or disbandment happened, apart from that, there's not necessarily a direct link.
Yes.
But disbanding the very thing that was a thorn in the side of certain people is in itself interfering with them getting to the bottom of the people whose sides that are thorn in the first place.
Most probably it was. It's along those lines. That's why those alleged people had interest in the disbandment of this whole thing. Most probably it was. That's why I'm saying.
So would that not be the link?
Administrative.
Would that not be the link then?
You know, when there's a link, if you go and investigate criminal processes and if it has to go to court, you will have to provide material evidence. Like,
sure.
You know,
yes.
At the moment, the only link is that that we have and we are sitting with is that, no, you were doing it because your chief of staff and your comrade, your chief of staff, which is Cedric, and your comrade, which is Brown Mokgotsi, they have allegedly have relationships, whether it's business, whether it's money and all those things, with the alleged cartels or group of individuals. That's the only link he's sitting with. And one would do the honorable. I don't think a criminal thing, but an honorable would say, let me leave this thing. I was misled by a chief of staff and a comrade. I didn't apply my mind properly. I didn't consult properly with the brass band of the police. And therefore, let me leave this position. I think on that note, if I become the devil's advocate and I'm saying, what is it that can save Minister Mkhulu, the image of the ANC, Edemo, is for him to resign. That's the first option. The second option is President Ramaphosa, even after the delay, he is now at a position based on the evidence that was put before the Madlanga Commission that he appointed, but he doesn't have to wait for the outcome of the Madlanga Commission. There's an ad hoc parliamentary committee, which consists of three committees of parliament. That committee, it's a parliamentary committee, what they are discovering or they are fine. They don't have to wait for the end. The president can act based on what the ad hoc committee has discovered.
Yes.
He can act on that. And like I said, save the situation. Appease the opposition and the country and the people. Stop paying two ministers. Already we have a problem that you appointed a non-MP to a full position of a minister when there is a minister who's on suspension. Because he's just on suspension, but he's still a full minister. He's still getting his perks and everything. He's just not in the office.
Sure.
So to save that situation is to be to release one, and the only one to be released here is Minister Mkhunu.
Sure. Let's move to the ad hoc committee, the Madlanga Commission, Masemola, Mkhwanazi, Nkosi, all trending this
week. Yes, yes. Let me, you know, I don't praise people easily, but I must seriously praise National Police Commissioner Masemola, Fani Masemola, the way he conducted the return of Masemola to the ad hoc committee.
He was more prepped this time.
No, he was more prepped.
He came, you know, you got a sense that he remembered who the hell he is and he stepped up to it.
No, he did fresh. He stepped up to it. I maybe when they went there the first time, they had undermined that committee and what would have come out of that. Even at the Madlanga Commission, he was not, but this time he was well prepped. He had the facts on the table. He had answers, and he spoke like the National Police Commissioner, General Fani Masemola. You understand? He spoke like that. He mentioned a lot of legislative processes. You know, he went to an extent of even talking about how them being called generals, it's wrong. You understand what the constitution prescribed? They are commissioners. They are not generals. They are not in the army. He spoke about the processes that Minister Mkhunu should have followed. But professionally, without attacking him, I've also seen a step back. They've removed him and Lieutenant General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi. They've removed the foot from the pedal of fire because of firing at Mkhunu. Now that it's out there in the public space, they are saying, can you see we're not lying? We're exonerated. The problem is the rot in the police service. And when we tried as the leadership of a province and national to deal with the rot, actually they came to us firing. They started allegations about us and all those things. So Commissioner Masemola, or General Masemola, did a very splendid job with the ad hoc committee. It was very satisfactory to see a leadership of the police talking with authority.
Sure.
But what is important, and we have to give credit where it's due, he, for me, as a civil servant, he managed to respond to what solutions are you proposing? Where do you think the country... Now we have this problem, we know, and the rot may still be there.
Yes.
What would you want to say to this committee? And he was very clear in response to say, we must continue investigating our people. We must continue to prosecute the cases that are pending, that were withdrawn either by courts or by NPA immaterially or illegally. And then he appealed to the committee, I will need the portfolio committee of parliament to support me in executing those duties. So he even had a plan of how is he going to resolve this. And for me, it shows professionalism. And moving to Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, he came fire blazing. Because remember, there were accusations after his testimony. They called a number of witnesses, and there were accusations from various people. One of the things that I think he made a mistake with, no matter how perfect he may seem, was not to disclose during his first testimony that he had met with Cat Matlala around April, May 2025. Who is Mr. Vusimuzi Cat Matlala is in the center of this whole controversy. And but in his defense, he stood up in the ad hoc committee and said, yes, I did. I didn't have to disclose it because I didn't deem it necessary. I meet as a police person, he said, policemen and investigators and commissioners, they will meet criminals or alleged criminals. He says sometimes he goes and he meets people who are already sentenced because they may have plea bargaining. They may give information that the police will need. And he admits that he was aware that Mr. Matlala's name was already in the public forum. But he decided this guy is asking for a meeting with me, and he's asking via the former police minister, Becky Tele, let me hear him. And there's nothing wrong with that, according to him. They meet with alleged criminals or potential informers at all times.
Yes.
But I personally think, Jude, looking at his kind of personal caliber. I think Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi should have mentioned this when he
the first time around.
The first time around. Mm. He should have mentioned that along those lines, in investigating these things and gathering information, a Mr. Matlala that he had already mentioned several times before, even at the press briefing, asked for a meeting with me through Minister or former Minister Becky Tsele, and I met with him on such and such a day, and this is what was discussed. He should have not waited for somebody to go to the community center, but he's not telling you the entire truth. Why doesn't he also tell that he had met Mr. Matlala? Mm. So, but look, it was their last round, last return to that. He once again, Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, apologized and to Minister Tsele for, you remember the allegation that
yes.
Minister Tsele had received money through the third party.
Yes.
When they were investigating, the accounts were mixed. But the cherry for him, it's when the ad hoc committee evidence leader, the senior counsel and the team, they played a recording, a tape of a conversation between General Sintumule with what do you call the other gentleman, Sibiya, General Sibiya. When they played a recording that actually exonerated or confirmed the allegations that were made by Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, and I listened to that fresh. It was actually very bad. The defense, if I was a judge or a presiding officer over this matter, I wouldn't buy the testimony of Sintumule.
Yes.
Because he gave everything and he was talking negative about how Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi is a problem with this thing. General Sibiya, I've worked with you, I've known you for long, you deserve to be a police commissioner. Don't allow this thing, disband that PKTT and do it in such a way. Get the dockets first and all that. And when probed previously, General Sintumule went on and said, no, I was just misleading Sibiya. So she's actually also throwing General Sibiya under the bus.
Yes.
But, you know, as somebody said, and I think it's Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi who said, there's no honor amongst the thieves. I don't say these people are the thieves, but it's an English quotation.
Yes.
To say, all these people have done all these wrong things. And now they are coming out to say, no, I did it just to mislead that one, to put him more in the wrong. That one is a snitch. That one is corrupt. They're all doing that. And last week we spoke about how General Sintumule went in front of the ad hoc committee to display her BBL or bombs that she bought with her own money. But people are also making a mistake. We shouldn't be focused on what is exciting.
Mm.
The lifestyle audit, another thing that General Masemola asked for in the ad hoc committee, is to say we must check we must have a lifestyle audit of police officials from top to bottom.
Yes.
Don't look at the sergeant at the bottom because he has just bought himself a double cab and like his salary can buy him a double cab vehicle. Let's look at these generals. What they have, the houses they drive, the car, their lifestyle, the flying abroad, their families, what is the source of their income?
Mm.
But I also appreciate what Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi and Commissioner Masemola have said, to say people must not think policemen can be business people. The Constitution of the Republic of South Africa and the Police Act does not bar them from having businesses, as long as they don't do business with the state like all other civil servants. And also as long as their business are declared and they are genuine, they can do business. But you see, once you become a police person, you are tasked to be dealing with, for example, construction mafia, and you've got a construction firm as well, or you are in the building industry, you are conflicted. You understand? Because you may abuse your police powers to can deal with your business opponents.
Mm.
And that's conflict of interest. But the kind of businesses, I know quite a number of policemen. And when I say police, I don't talk only about men and women in blue saps.
Mm.
Talking about the metros, I'm talking about the National Traffic Police, I'm talking about the cross-border road traffic inspectorate, I'm talking about the border guards. Those are law enforcers and they are also called peace officers. The problem with, when I look at the trend, they tend to have businesses in questionable areas. Construction, taxis, you know, where there's conflict, where they're supposed to be investigating. And it makes me sit and think, oh, are they not the one who are actually causing the havoc there?
Yes.
Knowing the power they have to can arrest, investigate, sometimes to even kill. I don't say police people are killing other people. I'm saying they are more at the advantage position to can eliminate they are business rivals.
Looking at what we've gotten out of Madlanga Commission versus the ad hoc committee, which would you say has given us more clarity and a better idea of exactly how rotten and how deep the rot might be?
It was supposed to be the ad hoc committee. And yes. I've consistently said the ad hoc committee, it's a committee of statute and legislation.
Mm.
Its member is a committee of a legislative assembly of the country. But they've dismally failed to give us what you are asking, a better picture of what is going on. They failed to go to the bottom of that as compared to the Madlanga Commission. And I'll tell you why I'm saying that. The Madlanga Commission people, South Africans are still scared of courts and they take courts serious. You know, you're in front of a judge, you're in court, and that commission, the three judicial members, two senior advocates, one acting judge, and one retired judge of the Constitutional Court. I can't remember if Madlanga was in the Concord, but he's a retired judge. They have nothing to lose politically in that process. So they were not biased. I've said before, there are bias between the alleged criminals who are not educated and the civil servants who come there, but they didn't take political sides. So it gave us more of the meat of what is going on. It was run professionally, or it is being run very professionally. You could see its legal eagles that are sitting there. The people who go there as well, they conduct themselves in a manner that says you are in front of a very serious...
Bonal decorum.
Yeah, bonal decorum. Now you go to where there's supposed to be proper decorum. That circus. You know, when I want to laugh, I watch actually the ad hoc committee. And you look at how members of the ad hoc committee have been conducting themselves. You've got, I'll mention a few. You've got Saul, the Patrick Ayens, a leader or MP who will sit there, read the Bible, give us speeches and praise Jesus and tell people, do you fear Jesus and all that. So he's bringing his religious base and background too much into a political house.
Yes.
And for me, if I was sitting on that, I would not even allow him to finish a statement telling me about religion. I'm there for a legislative thing.
Yes.
You don't know the religion. Don't impose your religion on me. Yes, it's your 15 or 30 minutes, but I don't want to hear about your religion, how you fear God and Jesus, because
yes.
I may be a Satanist. You must respect mine.
Exactly.
Understand?
Yes.
So I didn't like that part, and I don't know why the chair of that committee, Soviet Lekhanyane, allowed that to happen over and over. And knowing that South Africa is a diversity nation, there are people inside that committee who are Muslims.
Hmm.
There are people there who are atheists. Understand? So that part. Then you have Miss James, that many years, she has become the darling of Action SA.
I was going to say, I mean, that monologue that Aline James of Action SA gave to Tlantlam 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 Tlantlam, it was borderline a movie perfect performance. No shot that if I only did it.
Waste that opportunity. Don't praise the person, focus on the work and the outcome.
Yes.
They were seen praising General Mkhwana. Look, I have nothing against General Ntando Mkhwana, so Lieutenant General Ntando Mkhwana. I like him. I think he's a brave man. He's a good civil servant. But guys, we are here to work, not to sing praise. We are here to defend and protect the nation. Then you also look at Julius Malema, the firebrand of South African Parliament in the last 10 years. Julius led his fire vibrant, you know, in assessing this thing and reviewing it. It depends who was sitting there. When it was Mkhwanazi, when it was Robert McBride, we just saw majority of them except the Democratic Alliance representatives. All of them, they became real MPs and firebrands when it was Paul O'Sullivan sitting there. And that professor, what is her name? The professor who looked like she has lost her mind. We saw them attacking. Even the lady who came there, who was accused, the Paul O'Sullivan's...
Or the honeypot.
The honeypot meat or whatever. Yes, yes. Even her, they went hard on her. Everybody else, they treated, including when Kat Matlala was there. That adult community, they did something that was, for a change, decent. They treated the alleged criminal kingpin, Mr. Vusimusi Cat Matlala, they treated him with respect. They treated him well. And for me, that was very impressive because the man is not yet convicted. You had to treat him with decorum and treat him well. Don't treat him like he's a criminal already. They did the right thing. But with all others, with Robert McBride, shame, he walked over them. Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, he made them sing praises and all that. So, 10 as the maximum points, I'll give the other committee 5. And I'll give Madlanga committee 7.
Sure.
And so far in what they have done.
Yes. Let's move to the ANC in Johannesburg. There's been a move for Dada Morero to be recalled as mayor. And you know, you spoke about this 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, yeah, about how there can't be two centers of power.
Yes.
The minute he's not chairperson, Yajosi, then surely he shouldn't be mayor.
Yes, yes. And first, look at it. Even before I spoke about two centers of power 2-3 weeks ago, at the election, which was months ago, of Miss Masuku.
Yes.
I looked at the slates inside the ANC. The Masuku slate backed by first secretary general of deputy secretary general of the ANC, Nomvula Mokonyane, was a clean sweep. And the slate of Dada Morero, backed by the secretary general of the ANC, Fikile Mbalula, was dismantled. They were beaten. Now, what is it saying? It shows more of the divisions inside the ANC, whereby the secretary general is backing one candidate, the sitting chair or the then sitting chair and current mayor of Joburg. The deputy secretary general is backing the incoming people. Then they pushed, which were supported by all other political parties in the council of Joburg. Then they backed that a post of a deputy mayor be created. And obviously the ANC took that position for Masuku. I'm still baffled and surprised why other parties. Remember, Johannesburg is governed by a coalition.
Yeah, why would mayor and deputy be from one party?
Exactly. It still baffled me. And I'm suspecting that there were negotiations behind the scenes or outside the chambers to say to them, no, we are just bringing Masuku in to push Dada Morero out. So there were engagements and negotiations with Action SA, with the EFF and Patriotic Alliance and other parties that are involved, like Al Jamal. I think they said, no, we'll allow you to have two because Dada Morero is leaving. That's why exactly 2 weeks after Masuku has been inaugurated as the deputy mayor of Joburg, after a week, the REC, the Regional Executive Committee of Johannesburg region of the ANC, sat and decided to recall Dada Morero. And we spoke about it last week. But, the way we are together a lot these days, I can't remember we spoke about it on the podcast or we spoke about it on the radio on Monday. When did the news break down? But when the news came out to say the REC of the ANC in Joburg has decided to recall Dada Morero as the mayor of Joburg, I did mention it months back that ANC does not believe in the two centers of power. But I said, I want to see how the ANC National Executive Committee, which has a final say, going to do with this, because the REC had to write and or inform the Provincial Executive Council led by Panyaza Lusufi and the National Executive Committee led by Fikile Mbalula to say, we are recalling Dada Morero. Now, who is Dada Morero? Is the favorite of Mbalula and to some extent of Panyaza Lusufi. Understand? So that's where it puts them in a dilemma. But we saw this past week, the Secretary General of the ANC came gun blazing, said, no, this REC must wait. They have no authority to can recall a mayor. Mayors are deployed by the NEC. The NEC is a final decision-making board. But I don't know why would Fikile Mbalula do that. I don't understand why, because the fact that the REC took a decision, which they're entitled to make a decision, it's their committee, and informed the PEC and the NEC, that is seeking the endorsement of the PEC and the NEC. So you can't say they don't have the authority that they did not remove Dada Morero. They are recommending that he should be removed, like it was done previously in the ANC not to have two centers of power. But in the coming weeks, we will see what is going to happen. I said if it goes to a push, the own ANC people will table a motion of no confidence, or they will use one of the small political parties to table the motion of no confidence in the sitting mayor, and in order not to be embarrassed, yes, or to dissolve the council at this critical stage.
Yeah, but the mayor and his team and his slate could argue that, but we have challenged the outcome of the results. There were ballot papers that were stuffed or whatever, and that the deputy mayor's win may have been irregular.
Yes.
So if I'm appealing, well, I'm saying, can we look into this? Surely I must wait first anyway.
But the disadvantage...
In position.
The disadvantage, two disadvantages today to Mr. Dada Marero, the mayor. He has already said, when this, remember the reason they gave to recall him is that his special advisor in the mayoral office is the one who went to court to challenge the REC election.
Okay.
So he said, it's not me, but that's his special advisor. So it's already putting me at a disadvantage that, no, you are not challenging this. The second part is, the ANC has been having a practice fresh. You will recall for many years.
Yes.
Anybody who takes the ANC to court, you remember from the Ace Makashule's time, from the time of Mpo Ramakata, you remember Mpo Ramakata in the Free State before you joined the EFF?
Was it Ramakatani?
Is it Ramakatani? Yes, he took the ANC to court, up to the High Court and even the Appeal Court, and he won the case, you understand? And at that time, he was taking the PEC of Ace Makashule in the Free State to court. Anybody who has taken the ANC to court in South Africa has actually came out wounded, because the ANC doesn't naturally appreciate being taken to court by one of their members. They fight to the bitter end. They sometimes even defy court orders when it's one of them who have taken them to court. But you know what does this say to me, Fresh? It says to me, there's much bigger factions in the ANC, especially in Gauteng. The Gauteng provincial ANC is divided, and this is giving other political parties like the Democratic Alliance, the Patriotic Alliance, and mainly Action SA. It gives them an advantage to take advantage of those gaps inside the ANC. If the president pronounces elections to happen in November, as we're expecting, I've already said I'm expecting them in February next year. But if he pronounces, we are left with 10 months, actually not even 10, 9 months before the local government elections. You don't want an organization that is still infighting.
Yes.
At this, especially infighting at a local government, because REC of Gauteng, it's actually a local structure of the biggest metro they want. You don't want to lose Joburg to Helen Zille or to Herman Mashaba, because those are the only two challenging people. But in my observation, I think the ANC in Joburg is going to be humiliated to move from the ruling party to actually be number three. I predict that the African National Congress is going to move from number one. They don't have 50% already. I think they in the last elections they got less than 40. That's why they had to go on coalition. In the last elections were in 2019 for local government. I think they are going to move from being number one to number three.
Yeah.
And
that bad.
Yeah. It is because of the infighting.
Yes.
And the people of Joburg being dissatisfied, and the strengthening of political parties like Action SA. There's three things that are working to their disadvantage. The infighting, the constituency or the voters being unhappy, or residents. And the third one, other political parties are working the ground and taking advantage of the mess on the ground.
So,
but you know, in conclusion of this, there's something very worrying about Gauteng and Cape Town, not Joburg and Cape Town. Over 90% of voters are black. And I've said people in South Africa still vote according to the color line or along the racial lines. 90% of black people in Joburg are black people. If you look at townships and squatter camps and one, even in Cape Town maybe it's 70. But they go and they vote the so-called or be seen as predominantly white parties like the DA. And for me, it makes me question, are the people really unhappy about the services, or are people boycotting the elections? Therefore, when you come and use statistics and numbers, those who vote tend to be those who are well off in suburbs. And they give the DA and other parties a chance. But it's going to be very challenging. Trust me, President Ramaphosa and the ANC knows politics. I see them making these elections February 2027. It is too close now, fresh, that they will have elections in November. They will be walloped.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what's happening over there by MKP. Because it seems like Dr. John Schloppe is back again as a parliamentary leader.
Yes.
Why was he gone in the first place? And how is this linked to Colleen Makubele saying, I'm done? And all of a sudden, now she's been given a job.
Yeah. Look. How given the job by given? How was he gone? You know, MKP played us and played the members and when the nation, I think they are running it like a COVID operation on the side. He never resigned. He was never charged. He was never fired. What happened was, if we recall, Colleen Makubela, or Miss Colleen Makubela, who was the whip of the opposition in controversies apart in parliament, accused in a very lengthy, over 10 pages of sexual harassment allegations against Dr. John Schloppe when she became the whip, or when she joined controversies and became actively in parliament. That was the first thing. Then MKP decided, in line with their constitution, to investigate and suspend Dr. John Schloppe from being the leader of the opposition in parliament. So he was the parliamentary head of controversies. But if we recall at that time, fresh, Dr. Schloppe said, instead of facing a disciplinary hearing, he wrote to the MKP, President Jacob Zuma, to say, I would rather leave. Mm. I would rather vacate my position than to go and be held in front of the disciplinary. At that time, it worried me. Why wouldn't you want to? Probably wanted to avoid what we saw at Menenge. What is the judge president of the Eastern Cape name? Menenge. Judge Menenge. Probably he tried to avoid, you know, his either WhatsApps or messages being read to public and all that. And the case never took place. There was never a disciplinary hearing, and controversies were ghosted at us as the nation and as analysts and media people. Now, fast forward a few weeks ago, actually it's been exactly 2 weeks, Ms. Colleen Makubele resigned from controversies of parliamentary service, not from the party, as a whip, and he took a career at Power FM as a, what do you call it, a host. What do you call the people who the host or whatever, the anchor?
Yes.
And it's been 2 weeks immediately after taking that post in the radio station. Absolute change of career. By the way, this woman is an engineer, then he's a businesswoman, then he's a politician. Now he's a radio anchor. Mm. You know, there's hope for me. I actually called her to say, hey, what's going on? Let's go and have tea. Mm. What is going on? Why did? And she said, we'll meet, but we never did. Then subsequently, Dr. John Schloppe was announced during the course of this. It was breaking news on Wednesday, actually, evening, that Dr. John Schloppe has been reinstated to his position as the leader of the official opposition in parliament. And Mr. Tony Engeni, who's the second deputy president of controversy, has been acting in that position.
Do you think Colleen walked away because she felt that she was not being protected?
You see, Fresh, she refused to beat him. I would have had information.
No, so let's speculate.
Refuse, we have
in the absence of a meeting, we shall speculate.
Yeah, my speculation is, I think when Colleen is a very disciplined person.
Yes.
She's very principled. And me and you, we have hosted her when she was still forming that, what was that political party? SA Umzansi. She's very principled. She's very disciplined. I think she took a principled decision against what she termed patriarchal moves and male dominance, to say, if the political party that I believed in, I sacrificed my own political party, I sacrificed my career to take a political position in parliament, is not going to abide by its founding principles as of the manifesto to protect women, you know, against patriarchy, abuse and all those things, I would rather walk out.
Mm.
But she did it diligently. She didn't, you know, cast aspirations, and she has made her laments formally and she left them there. So I think what happened is Umkhonto's party may have failed to address the concerns and the laments and the complaints of Corinne Makubela procedurally. And she saw it as a protection of Dr. John Tlope. And she decided in that instance, I would rather leave. I think that's what transpired. Because it doesn't make political sense.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. She was doing very well. And there were no skirmishes or complaints from all other persons. When there were people who were rioting against her at some stage, it was said to be President Zuma's daughter to do Zile as well as the spokesperson Shamula. When all those things happened, I think Controversy handled it very well, and she was protected by the leadership of Controversy to continue doing her job. So it doesn't make sense when there's never been complaints that she's unable to perform her duties or she doesn't know what she's doing. Therefore, they would have swapped her around. But that's not the case. She left. And I think Colleen knew what to do in parliament as the whip. Because she has been in government, albeit at local government.
Yes.
She was the speaker of Joburg Metro.
And only work ethic, man.
No, she's very
ethical. What a waste.
But she's also level-headed. You know, she's like I said, people who are civil servants and business people and academics or professionals in their field, doctors, lawyers, engineers. Look at Nasipo Moya in Tswane.
Mm.
I mean, that lady is a medical doctor, you know, and she comes from where she comes from professionally. And look, the wonderful work she's doing in bringing Tswane as a coalition, as a glue. They tend to handle things better than career politicians because career politicians have aspirations, actually. Mm. For professionals like Colleen Makubele to leave their profession and enter politics, it's not driven by money and power because they already have those two things. It's driven most probably by wanting to serve and say, where can I make the difference?
To mommy, no.
Yeah, to my people. Not the song, not President Ramaphosa's To Mamina, which in my book has failed. But yeah, I suspect very strongly, I still want to talk to Colleen about this, I suspect very strongly that he left Umkhonto as a position, not the party, because of the organization's failure to handle her complaint in a manner she expected or the manner prescribed by the Constitution.
Sure. Let's move to the refugees, South African refugees in America. White genocide narrative takes another knock. What's going on there about refugees?
What do we call them now?
The returned refugees.
Returning refugees.
Yes.
Yeah, no. You know, this happens fresh at the back of the South African government. Last week we discussed it, lashing and calling in the United States ambassador to DERCO or to the protocol office. At the back of that, then there's this report that says 8 of the 49 South Africans who went to the USA under Donald Trump's administration and program of saving them from a white genocide of white farmers in South Africa. And at the back of that, when the ambassador of the USA still believes, he still believes we are a violent society against white people, particularly white farmers, Afrikaner farmers, he still believes that there's genocide happening in South Africa. And the people who left this country less than 6 months ago to go to the USA under a special program of refugees, special one, because it was they had to be white, you have to be an Afrikaner, you had to be from South Africa. While Trump is chasing other people away, he was importing white South Africans to be refugees in the US. Guess what's the reasons they are giving? Their reasons are true, that America is too violent. They claim to have never seen so much violence in their eyes because people were killed and shot in front of their eyes. People were beaten up in front. They've never seen that in South Africa. Now, these are the people who ran away from violence and they are going to what is supposed to be a safe haven for them in the United States. And they are saying it's worse there. The second part is they are saying the cost of living, and you always spoke about it, Fresh, the cost of living in the U.S. is going to hammer them. I can't remember how many times you are saying, hey, I wonder if those people will succeed in the U.S. with, what do you call those tickets when they give them tickets to get groceries and food? The coupons.
Or food stamps.
The food coupons. Stamps, yes. Yeah, the food stamps. You always lamented, how will they survive? The word you like to use is that, there's no Mavis or Emmanuel who is going to be doing your garden and cleaning your house. You'll be the one doing that.
Yeah, that's only on your own. You can't afford it.
Yeah. I think it's a slap on the U.S. face to say some of the refugees, it's a big number out of 49, are saying there's more violence. They've seen in the 6 months they're in the U.S., they've seen more violence. And I suspect it's mainly from the police. It's not from citizens or residents. That means that therefore they are preferred to go back home. But it also puts us on a spotlight as a country. Where do we stand on people who had accused us of genocide? You know, accusing a country of genocide, we are in the International Court of Justice at the moment accusing Israel for genocide against the Palestinian, which is in front of everybody's eyes. But we are being accused by citizens of this country for conducting genocide against them, and they fly to America to seek a protection as refugees. What are we saying as a nation to them now wanting to come back home? And I think we have been caught off guard because we never expected South Africa, being a constitutional democracy and an epitome of a country that transcended from, what do you call this, that transcended from apartheid and apartheid genocide to a peaceful living together or arrangement. We never imagined and developed policies to say, what if one day we are being accused as genocide? Now, what are we going to do with these people who have spent 6 months in the U.S.? They're coming back to the country. What have they been doing? What if they were being trained to be spies or insurgents or to come and destabilize the country? Because the United States of America is very well known to can train, to can first recruit and train people to destabilize the country. They've done it in Iraq, they've done it in Libya, they've done it now in Iran, they've done it in Venezuela, to train and influence people who will destabilize a sitting government. And once it's done by citizens, they will come in and say, look at that government. It's jailing, harassing, beating up, or even killing their own citizens. We are going there to save them. I've got my own reservations and fears as a well-traveled South African to say, what is the position of these people? Can they be vetted for them to come back to their country?
How long does it take to train someone to be a sleeper or a spy?
It depends at the level of spying, and I don't know, people will ask me
how. Because now to tell you the honest truth, now like it's happy the intention, it's America at all.
I don't.
And they'll continue hammering on and on and on, trying to besmirch the good name of the country. No country is perfect. Yeah. South Africa is not perfect. Like any other country is not perfect. But the way in which they want to interfere in domestic affairs, but they can't be as blatant as they can maybe with other nations. And the fact that South Africa is probably right now more diplomatically astute than they are.
Yes, no, absolutely.
In dealing with them.
We are diplomatically astute.
But they will find other reasons to hammer on at the country because there's a mission here, there's a narrative, and they're very consistent about it. So we shouldn't for a minute think that they've stopped. Or we shouldn't for a minute think that jiggy jiggy, a plane from Palestine arrives there with refugees.
Yes.
That are they really refugees?
We don't know where they are, by the way.
That people arrive from Afghanistan through a bait bridge via some NGO in Zim.
25.
That Vela, that's all they were.
Yeah.
We had a
military training camp of Libyans in Mpumalanga.
Yes.
That's why I'm insisting on saying, if I was in government and I had a say and influence, I would say, the State Security Agency must vet these people on behalf of Home Affairs coming before back. Coming back in the country. They must vet and monitor them. Exactly. They must watch them.
Exactly.
In answering your question, how long does it take? When governments recruit agents or what is called spies, first of all, you must have something. They identify talent first. Are you a person who already having the capabilities of can handling secrets, living with secrets? The other, you know, one of the key requirements to be a spy against your own country is anger. Mm. You know, that is one of the identified elements to say how much anger it does this person has against his government. Those are one of the prerequisites that they go for. You don't go and take a very patriotic person who loves his country to try and recruit to be an agent or a double agent. You don't do that. You look at angry, disgruntled people and all that. And then you train them, you know, you endorse them, you promise them money, you train them, you give them comfort. That's why I'm saying monitoring people with suspect, it's very important. What is going to be their lifestyle when they come back to South Africa? And what are they going to afford? How will they be living? Those are some of the things. If I was in a position to monitor them, I will do that. Mm. But we shouldn't drop our eyes and ears on these people returning from the USA. It's and they're adults fresh. It's not kids who went there for 6 months. 6 months is a lot of time. Actually, in 6 months, you can train a person even to operate arms physically. It's a very long time.
So
when you are sitting in a country that is well equipped and well advanced like the US with everything, 6 months to train that person to be a killing machine. Mm. Already, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of time. It's more than enough.
Or just to be a saboteur.
Yeah. Understand? They can come and give them equipment to can go and send information in social media. Plus, we are a country that does not suppress social media.
Mm.
And you see, democracy sometimes, constitutional rights and democracy, sometimes they are very bad for the country. That's why the countries like the US, which are pushing for democracy, when their own citizens start demanding absolute democracy, they get donored, locked up, shocked.
Mm.
You understand? And that's the challenge the world is faced with. But more and more countries of the world, the youth is actually questioning, does democracy really work?
Mm.
Did I tell you there was a referendum in Australia in February?
Okay.
Amongst the youth, not a referendum, a survey.
Yes.
A survey in Australia. And the outcome of the survey is that over 60% of Australian youth are saying, maybe we must revisit this democracy thing. It doesn't work.
We discussed it on the on the radio show 938 a couple of months ago.
Yes.
Asking people if Vele, does democracy work? Do you feel that democracy works in its current form? Do you feel that maybe it gets in the way of progress? Because unfortunately, if things are democratic, then sometimes you might consult to the detriment of the very thing you're trying to fix.
Yeah, and look, absolute of everything is not good.
Yes.
You know, you can have a very nice, beloved dictator. You can have, that's why mixed economics and mixed processes, like countries like Germany, they are progressing. Because you may find that their form of democracy, it still has an element of saying the minority voice has the power. That's why you find political parties in a country like the Federal Republic of Germany,
yes,
a minority party like the Green Party, they can go and present a paper in parliament that will block the majority party from implementing policies that are anti the environment. But they are just a tiny minority with 3% of the vote. So to have an absolute freedom, absolute democracy and all that, it is not going to work. And first, let us be very honest. Most of the progressive countries in the world today are not absolute constitutional democracies like South Africa. You have countries, even in Latin America, even in Europe itself.
Yes.
You have countries where the government makes a decision, put its foot down, like what France is doing, and say, we have made this decision as government. You will have to live with it. We are the government. If you don't like it, let's go for a referendum or let's go for elections. But South Africans are not using our advantage to say our constitution makes provision for referendum. You remember you mentioned it in the radio to say, guys, but why are we waiting? Why are we not calling for a referendum to say to President Ramaphosa or to say to the GNU, I man, this thing is not working. Let's have elections now. We are not exercising that right, and we have that right.
Have a snap election.
There's a provision in the constitution that we can actually ask for a referendum, and we're not doing it. We can ask for a referendum in many things. Mm. There are people who have been asking for death sentence to come back. Mm. Nobody's filing a paper to say, let's go for a referendum. Let the people talk. Mm. We are waiting for elections. And then when elections come after every 5 years, we are doped. You understand? We are doped to forget the things we were crying for 5 years.
Remember, before the election that we had a couple of years ago, remember we had this conversation, I think it's in Estonia, where they are so fully digitized that they can have snap referendums on their phones on any issue immediately.
Yes, yes. And fresh Estonia, when it comes to digital technology,
yes.
My brother, let me tell you, we did a study as my employer, ex-employer across border with Estonia.
Yes.
They are the world-leading country in truck movements between them and other Eastern European, West European.
Yes. Yes.
A truck gets cleared while it's driving.
Everything is digital. Everything is digital.
Everything is digital in Estonia. Mm. So having countries like that, and they are actually having a referendum on their, smartphones.
Yes.
And then once the results are out, a parliament sits and say, the majority of the people say, we must change this law, we must do this now. Mm. And then they implement the designed process.
The system is slick on anything. If there's a pothole, you send the location on your phone, the next day is dealt with. That's how efficient the system is.
We don't have it on the topic, but we'll talk about it next week. You know, last week, the IEC, Independent Electoral Commission, they opened because it's a year of elections, so season of elections, they opened last week the voter registration week. Ne? You know, they say they've reached the target of youth.
Yes.
Last weekend only. That they've over 267,000 people went on, clicked and registered. And I said, because it's digital.
Yes.
Because they could do it on their laptops or smartphones.
And carry on with their lives.
But when it's time to vote, you don't want to give them that opportunity to vote online.
Exactly.
You will have quite a big number of potential voters. These are not voters. They are registered, but they are potential. They are not actual. Because come election time, the same youth who is between 18 and 25, which was the target, you go and check during voting, where are they? Because they're not going to wake up and queue.
Yes.
That's not the point. To say, no, we have got the numbers, they are turned around. I think the IEC is missing an opportunity of how they can bring back or influence the youth to come and vote. They are missing an opportunity. You give them an opportunity to register voting during the first week of voter registration week for the local government election, but you don't want to give them the opportunity to vote online.
Yes.
If they don't want us, the Madalas, because me, you know, me and technology, to say we may waste votes, let them actually then do a special clause or dispensation for youth. Mm. Because all political parties, all parents, all concerned organizations are saying, but our youth are laxed. Mm. Our youth, let's incentivize them then. Mm. Let's incentivize them as a nation, because we don't care who they vote for. We care that they must rise and vote for their own future. Why don't we do that? I know somebody's going to say that will be unconstitutional, that will be discriminating, but why should youth vote digital and not everybody? But I am proposing solutions for the problem we are having here.
Yes.
And the problem is our youth don't want to queue.
Yes.
We spoke last month about the queue when there was a military a day.
Oh, yes. It's in Toyando.
In Toyando.
Yes.
Look how youth, there were recruitment. Look how youth, we discussed it. There were zigzag snake lines of youth wanting to apply for jobs. You know why they are prepared to queue? Because they are hungry, they want jobs. Mm. They are unemployed, they've got qualifications. That's why they will queue. Mm. But they don't see the benefit of voting.
Mm.
To queue for 4 or 5 hours for voting when those you vote for, after they get into office, they are not taking care of your needs.
Yeah, they go back to the ivory towers.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's where the IEC is failing.
Mm.
They need to relook at the voting system. We still have a chance, and we are a technologically advanced country. Guys, our SARS and banks are having the best technologies, and they are working.
Yes.
Our banks, private banks, and our South African Revenue Services. Only those two. I don't want to talk about others.
And the fact that the banks are now becoming another place you can go to get Home Affairs services means that the systems are linked.
Yes.
Your average young person has a smartphone, they have a bank account, they are on the database like Home Affairs. You know, they've got biometrics. They can make sure that one person votes once.
Yes.
What is the problem?
Why are we not extending that? Why? We are using banks' systems linked with Home Affairs system to can help the nation and the people at voting there.
Yes.
At voting there.
Vote and I'm done for the day, man.
Exactly.
And I have my life back.
You will see.
You might not even need to take the day off anymore to vote.
Please, if I can vote digital, I can vote during my smoke break.
How about you? Hi, B.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Yes, my brother.
Today is day 21 of the war on Iran or in Iran or the attack on a state that, in the bigger scheme of things, was not a threat. In fact, anti-counterterrorism boss, I think his surname is Kent, resigned this week, saying that his conscience does not allow for him to carry on watching what's going on in the Middle East because the intelligence shows everything but that Iran was a threat. And typically after he stated that, Trump attacked him. Because you don't quit on Trump and not get attacked.
Yeah.
He'd either call you weak or that anyway, you were taking and not really efficient. But the long and the short of it is hopefully this one domino will cause others to fall and for others to stand up and say, we can't continue to watch what is happening in the Middle East. Because the problem he feels, they underestimated Iran's resolve and that Iran have a wafa attitude about it right now.
Yeah.
That we're going down and we're all going down.
You know, Fresh, before he even attacked his own head of counterintelligence, Mr. Kent.
Counterterrorism and intelligence.
He first attacked the fellow member states of NATO, the North Atlantic Trade Organization.
Yes.
You know that name is still, it still rattles me that it's supposed to be a trade organization and became a war organization. NATO was made initially for trade. Then they
Wasn't it a treaty?
Treaty, North Atlantic Treaty. Oh, is it a treaty?
Yes.
So they've got the treaty agreement.
Yes.
Why is military their primary? It's the North America. And Australia is involved.
North Atlantic, yes.
Yeah, but it's the North Atlantic. Majority is the EU member states. And the military became their might because I've never seen them teaming up together when it comes to trade issues. That's why probably I interpreted it as trade. He attacked them. He started with Spain because they wanted to use the airspace of Spain. I think it was on day 12 or 13, and Spain said, no, not our airspace. Then Germany started saying, we're not getting involved in the war. Then the UK, and he said to the UK, they've been anyway a bunch of cowards. They've been relying on us. They were shining because of us.
And I think he upset a lot of people in England when he said that anyway, they just stood and watched us in Afghanistan. That time, soldiers fell.
The British lost a lot of soldiers
British
in Afghanistan.
British soldiers fell in Afghanistan.
For a war that was not theirs.
The Queen sent her grandson to fight in Afghanistan.
Yes.
Right now, we have a guy who dodged the draft God knows how many times, ordering people to go into war.
It's the time
his son is not being drafted.
Exactly. Now, after that, the country that really, really broke from NATO, President Trump or the Americans, was Italy, the Prime Minister of Italy. Oh, no, a lady amongst men stood up and said, I'm not listening to you. We're okay with our pizzas and pasta. We are not interested. We don't even want to negotiate. We don't want to talk.
It's not our battle.
We are not even going to discuss it in parliament. As the Prime Minister of Italy, I'm saying no. We are not involved.
It's not our war.
That is leadership. You know, we are not interested. But do you know why countries like, I don't know why France is dragging itself into this, Spain and Italy. They are the Latin Europe. They are the closest to the Middle East. It will be easy to attack Spain and Italy than any other country in Europe, from Iran or any other country in the Middle East. That's why they were saying, no, we are not interested. The missiles from Iran, they will reach Spain and Italy faster than they will reach England and other places.
And that aside, just even just at a principle level, it is not your war.
It's exactly.
There was no reason to go into Iran, and many will argue it, make America great, maggots as they're called, they will argue in its favor. Trump fans will argue in his favor. Pro-Israelis will argue. There's no reason to invade Iran.
Well, Trump friends argue in his favor. Now, the chief of counterterrorism, one of the most decorated servicemen in the USA with a whole lot of experience, stands up and say, we want the Secretary of State, we want the deputy president, we want the president, before this war even started, that there is no imminent threat from the Islamic State of Iran to can attack America, Israel. We warned them.
Yes.
They even made reference, according to Mr. Kent's speech, they even made reference to the fact that after the attack on Iran last year, that lasted 12 days, they went back and said, actually, we claim to have bombed and destroyed the nuclear thing. We bombed nothing. There's nothing that shows. You know, when you bomb a nuclear site, there'll be radiation and all those things. There's nothing. Now, you don't listen to a person that you have employed. One is experienced. He's a seasoned intelligence and military person. He advises you and tells you, we were wrong the first time. Let us know this. You don't listen. It is day 21, 22, 23 today of the war with Iran. You still haven't achieved anything. You have killed the Iranian supreme leader and key military personnel. Iran is not backing off. Understand? And when this guy decides, I'm not going to be part of this anymore, I'm resigning, you call him names instead of calling your people back and say, let's take a step back and reflect.
But we can't take steps back and reflect when I listen to no one. Intelligence actually is just a suggestion. It's not a recommendation.
Fresh, how much powers does the president of the United States has that you cannot listen to anyone? What are the other people existing for?
You're not the
president. Not the normal citizens.
Unfortunately, there are more people who are almost helping him beat his own chest than there are people saying enough madness. The fact that you can talk about how Spain won't let us use their air bases, but they can't stop us. We can do what we want.
Mm.
Just the other day, he's talking about how maybe I should just go and take over Cuba. It will be an honor. And
we are laughing about it. He may take over Cuba before the end of the year.
And you know, this is the same attitude that the very same men and women surrounding him used to say when he was running for office, that this is a narcissist who doesn't care, who wants things his way. Anybody in his way is an enemy.
Who said that? This is not the Secretary of State.
Yes.
Yes, Bert.
Little Marco.
Marco, was he called him? Marco Rubio, yes.
All of the people who are around him at some stage called him out on the very things he's doing right now. And the fact that even women that have accused him of, he does what he wants. He'll even grope you.
Mm.
He's groping countries now. This is consistent behavior, but nobody is calling it out enough to say, let's stop the madness. Congress, in fact, by busy trying to sign off on more money so that this war continue and the industrial complex can continue to make billions of dollars.
But at what expense are they misleading him, or are they living in the pie in the sky, in a pipe dream? At what expense? Don't they care about their country? Don't they see the risk? Don't they care about their people?
All this is doing is reinforcing the fact that might is right. Operating like a thug is the only way you'll get things. And that if you're not a bully, then they're going to walk all over you too. Oh, that's all that this is showing. And it means then that any other nation can one day stand up, bump its head, and decide, you know what, you're a small country, and I think I want you.
You know, I saw a document, a very short document of 24 minutes of an analyst from Iran explaining why Iran won't stop. You know, they have it in their command and control clause of the Constitution that if a war has started and the supreme leader is killed. In absence of another supreme leader saying stop firing, they don't stop. It's a law in Iran. That's one. Two, what they did was...
I thought there's a new supreme leader. Kima Mojava or something.
The son, yes.
Yeah, Kima Mojava.
But listen, he hasn't. This is what I'm trying to explain. Why is it happening? Now, when they enacted this law in Iran, Iran has over 20 or over 30, what do you call them, provinces or regions. Mm. In each region, there's a war king maker, like a commander. This commander, there's no central. The central is the supreme leader. So if the supreme leader falls, the leader of war in a province or a region must continue fight, and they are equipped on their own.
Mm.
They must imagine about 30. They must continue fighting until the new supreme leader comes and say, you can stop now.
Mm.
Now, the new supreme leader has come and say, I am going to do better than what my father, I'm worse than my father. Mm. Just continue what you are doing and intensify. And I don't think the United States of America, they saw this coming.
Mm.
I don't think they expected the resistance. As you said at the beginning of the show, Iran is at the stage of wafa wafa. We are not retreating.
Mm.
We are not going back.
Let's scorch the earth.
Yeah, exactly. We know what's going to happen to Iran. It's going to look like Iraq. It's going to look like Libya. It's going to look like Palestine today. Let's rather fight with everything we have.
We'll rebuild.
And by the way, that's not a small nation. You don't undermine a nation that is over 300 years old compared to United States of America, which is just above 100 years old. There's a lot of whole life experience.
No, Persia is thousands of years old. America is the one that's just 300.
How old is the Persia, the Iran?
No, Persia as a region in Jay.
Over 1,000.
Thousands of years old.
Now that experience counts a lot. And I think the United States miscalculated, and they never thought Iran will arrive at this point. But you know, Fresh, when Trump came in, people's legs accusing me to say, but you always love Trump. And I said, but people fail to read what I call, you know, when you are talking passing people said to say America deserves President Trump.
Hmm.
I've always said they brought in a president who's going to press a reset button of the world. And in explaining it, I'm saying the reset button is to expose what you are talking about, the mighty, how Americans don't care about anything else about themselves, how the world may rise one day and said, enough is enough.
Mm.
Europe is showing it. You understand? Africa is being captured or recolonized or neocolonized by Russia and China. The focus is no longer on the US. It's like Mwana, who was used to all privileged toys.
Yes.
Now, when other kids have their toys, you become jealous. You don't say, now we can play together. You are saying, but why do you have toys even better than toys? And Americans are behaving like that. They are no longer getting attention. I don't think they are still the might, maybe militarily, because they can attack and kill majority of the nations in the world. But like I said, their might has been exposed now by Iran.
Mm.
And we never thought that. We thought Iraq was stronger than Iran. And Iraq was stronger, and it defeated Iran because they were supported by America. And actually,
they were armed by the US.
On hindsight today, where I was a youth when that war happened, I don't think Iraq defeated Iran. I think Iran pushed them back because they failed to destroy Iran 30 years back. They failed dismally. I think Iran pushed back, and America should have learned that time that they were backing Saddam Hussein 30 years back to fight Iran, and Iran pushed back. And it's lessons that we grew up, and we are seeing them happening today. Mm.
Persia goes back to the fifth millennium, so 6,000 years ago.
6,000 years.
6,000 years ago.
No, the Americans should have thought better. But if I know I'm going to die, some of us were brought up like that, you know, we would die firing a scorpion machine gun. I know I'm going to die.
Mm.
So let me rather die fighting. And I think the Iranians are on that point at the moment. By the way, talking about it, there's reports that came out before we came on set that the Iranian ambassador to South Africa has actually written a note verbal to the BRICS member states to ask for help, to say, as member states, we expect you to help, not militarily, any other form of help, communication, support, sure. make noise at the United Nations Security Council. Let us team together to fight this battle.
The only people with enough balls anyway to help militarily would probably be China and Russia. And I'm hoping that they're doing that.
I don't think they will. They may be doing it indirectly.
If anything, they did it in anticipation. Nobody was watching.
Yeah.
If anything.
The anti-aircraft technology that China, that Iran is using belongs to the Chinese. Mm. And we know how good Russia is at sea level or at naval level. So I think they may be helping indirectly, but directly they will not. But I think that the call by Iran to BRICS member states is to the UN.
So
to say, let's make noise, lobby your European partners. Mm. And look what happened during the course of the week. Israel went on and attacked after Trump had told... By the way, Israel defied Trump this week.
Hmm.
He said they must hold on. He's still consulting the Congress. And they went, they attacked the gas line in Iran.
Yes.
Guess what Iran did? They went and attacked the gas line in the United Arab Emirates.
Hey, was it Abu Dhabi or Qatar?
In Qatar, yes. You know who's at danger?
Hmm.
It's Europe.
Yeah.
Because now gas prices, and they're going leg gas... and lack gas in the next few months. So I think Iran is very smart by fighting both militarily and diplomatically to say, our friends, can we engage?
And you know, I might not agree with the politics of Iran, but I will defend for life their right to defend themselves.
That I will do as well, Fresh. Every human being or every sovereign state has a right to defend themselves against attack,
and if it means
by any other person or country,
and if it means by any means necessary, then they must do that.
Yeah, and I think Iran is on the right track.
Anyway, we're done. We must go home.
Thank you, Fresh. You know, I'm so exhausted. It's been a tough week for me.
It's been a tough year, brother man, and it's only been 2.5 months.
If there was a day I wanted to call you, it was Thursday in the morning, and today say, bro, I am not coming.
Like, you know, I almost did the same.
I nearly did that. And I dragged myself out of bed. And when I think of our followers and viewers, they were like, no, you can't just disappear without announcing, as if we can't get sick. I'm exhausted.
My alarm rang at 3 a.m. on Thursday. I snoozed it for 45 minutes.
Oh, that's a lot.
And then I looked at my phone. I'm like, let me message these guys and tell them I'm taking the day off. And then I was like, you know what? We have people who wait for us.
So I nearly did that.
Let's not let them down.
I nearly did that. Yeah. But anyway, thanks, brother man.
Where do we find you on social media?
Botsangm@gmail.com, on email @botsangm, on social media handles. And let's continue chatting on WhatsApp and 083 or +27 83 884 7787. And they can reach us Monday morning just after 8 o'clock news and Thursday morning just after 8 o'clock news as well on 938 FM. You can stream live. I forgot the...
938.co.za.
Or the channel as well on
DSTV. We're also on DSTV, but 938.co.za is probably the quickest way to get a hold of us if you're not in Johannesburg.
Thank you, Fresh.
Thanks to you, and thank you for being a part of another episode of Wow, What a Week! #Polytrix, coming to you from Discover TV. Let them be your stage. Shout out to Keletso Modisa King. She's our executive producer, and Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for making us look good. All of the cinematography, videography, every other gaffy that they do, they take care of. If we look good, it's their fault. If we look bad, it's our fault. And to you, thank you for joining us every single Saturday morning at 8, for engaging with the topics, for agreeing, for disagreeing respectfully, and for us finding one another eventually. Because life is a contestation of ideas, and if we don't find each other, we'll continue to bombard one another, sometimes with bombs even. So let's continue to have a dialogue and find one another. Because one day, Ritloba Sharp, one day. Till then, have a great week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.